Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And, you know, we covered what's been going on around the country and around this community in our university systems. Students at Hopkins, black students at Hopkins, and their allies standing up in the face of Hopkins. And then Towson erupted in a really most interesting way in taking over the president's office. But then something happened, and the president actually responded and sat down. Which is something that doesn't happen all the time. So we're going to talk about what happened there, why it happened, what's happening in Towson. We're joined by Corey Johnson, who's a member of the first debate team of black women to win a national championship, is a youth advocate for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, and one of the organizers of the Towson occupation and of the president's office. And Corey, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad I can be here.
Me too. And Davon Love's back with us once again, who is an alumnus of Towson University, director of research and public policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, who is in the midst of this stuff as well. Were you there, Davon?
No, I wasn't there.
410-319-8888 is the number to call. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on our Facebook pages. Email us at talk@steinershow.org. But do call in, 410-319-8888. So, Corey, talk about what happened.
So on Wednesday, it was the National Day of Action for college students. So, like, there was something put out for youth organizers, and they wanted college campuses across the country to respond. And so about a week prior to that, we had an event at Towson called We Are Mizzou, which talked about how not only are the things that are happening at Mizzou terrible, but that, like, we have our own problems at Towson at a PWI that are very similar in nature to Mizzou, and how we can kind of change the things on our campus, and that's how we could stand with Mizzou. And so we isolated about, like, 14 different things that our university needed to fix, and we took those to the president's office, and we staged a sit-in until we could get that document signed.
And what's interesting to me was the president actually came out and said, we're going to talk.
Yes.
Right?
Well, so originally when we sat there, he came out. He said, okay, well, I need a minute to review the document. And then he shut the door. And so we were like, okay, well, we have all day. So we sat there. He came back out with his staff, and they were like, we want to work through the document with you. So we did.
You know, when you look at, just to make broaden this out just a moment, come right back to Towson. I was thinking, Davon, if you look at what happened at Towson, even the response of the president of Johns Hopkins University when he was confronted, and wasn't confronted, he saw it going on, and he stopped what he was doing to come over and talk. The response at Yale, the response at a few other colleges that are taking place right now, Amherst, I meant more than Yale. I mean, it's interesting that I think that one of the shifts I'm seeing here is that universities are actually, some universities, are actually listening and saying, yeah, there is a problem, and we have to deal with this.
Well, I think a part of it is that with the demographic shifts, I think the changing in the social political climate, given that there are more conversations around equity that are becoming more mainstream, on one hand, one could look at it and see it as progress. In terms of institutions and they're responding to the needs of people. But in another way, you could look at it and say it's in the self-interest of those institutions to at least appear to be interested in those kinds of conversations to preserve themselves and their credibility and legitimacy with potentially many of the folks that they're going to end up having to recruit to their universities.
But that's not necessarily a contradiction or exclusive, right?
Right.
I mean, that's...
Right. Right. And I think different institutions on the spectrum of those things vary. So, I mean, even if I think about, like, my experience at Towson, you know, my experience at Towson is one where on the spectrum of the level of authentic investedness on issues of equity and addressing racism and white supremacy and other forms of domination, that Towson seems to me to be the kind of institution that, being that it's in Baltimore County, just north of Baltimore City, it's in its interest to at least appear to be responsive, as opposed to making kind of genuine, authentic moves and institutional transformations necessary to actually be an asset to the fight against the kinds of issues that the students organized around.
But I mean, one of the things when I read what the president signed, and I have a statement here that we can read in just a moment as well, that I mean, he signed things and said that he was going to, with dates on them, and said he would resign if he didn't do it. I mean, that's...
Well, and I think a lot of that has a lot to do with the wording. And so the wording is a lot of what we sat and met with. And after a while, I became frustrated because I thought that we were being pacified. I thought that we were, you know, being treated as children almost, like, you know, okay, let us help you through the document now. Now we'll work on this. And it's like, well, if you really cared about some of the issues that were happening, then you would address them, right? So, like, 2 weeks prior to us sitting in, black professors at the university went and tried to talk to the provost of the university as well as the president about the lack of tenure that black faculty were getting relative to the tenure that white professors were getting.
Right.
And their voices were not heard. So I think that it was strategic more so for Towson, the president, to sign this. But I definitely, like, with some of the wording even, you know what I mean, to act as an advocate, you know what I mean? That doesn't necessarily mean that that's actual implementation of change as opposed to I will advocate on behalf of, you know what I mean? I think that those are two different things. Not to say that this wasn't a step in the right direction, because all institutions serve institutional ends, and they have to serve a certain purpose. But as long as we're actively challenging some of, like, the material things that happen at those institutions, then, you know, I think that we are reaching our goal.
And if I could say something real quickly, just in addition to what Corey said, is that, because like she said, it's not to say that it's not a step in the right direction, but that it's important not to give too much credit, right, to an institution that is likely acting in its interest for the purpose of pushing it so that it can actually live up to what it says it wants to do. Because I believe there are folks there that probably legitimately want to live up to what it is that the students wanted to pursue, but it's the responsibility of students and advocates to push harder in order to make sure that there's some substantive things come out.
And I mean, I wasn't suggesting that because someone signs off something that it should be the end of the struggle and that things are all, you know, kumbaya and hunky-dory and let's all go have a beer together. Not at all. But I think that, I mean, when you have, I mean, the question of tenure for black faculty is a huge issue.
Definitely.
I mean, Towson or, I don't care, you name a university in this area. The numbers of, and the black faculty members, other than where we sit at a historically black institution, are fairly low. Whether it's Hopkins or Towson or Goucher or most any place in this community, and that's an issue because for lots of reasons, not just for black students, for all students to have black professors, right? I think this is a very critical piece.
Yeah, especially because, like, when you're at a predominantly white institution and you are a black student, you look for those connections with those black professors and they, you know, like, actively change your life and they, you know, give you meaning by like meaning and staying at the institution, and they let you know that, hey, you're not here alone. I can act as a resource for you. Every black professor that I've come in contact with at Towson, I try to make it my business to get to know them, and I realize, like, that I don't stand too much off from how they view the world, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And they also provide, I think, contributions to the enterprise of the academic work that's being done there as well, that I think is something to keep in mind. I mean, you think about the diversity of different expertise that a lot of black faculty come with. Not just with their personal experience, but with the intellectual work that they do and having that perspective. I think that's also important for students because I think, unfortunately, you know, a lot of our students don't necessarily have the diversity of the kinds of intellectual work that might draw them in and make them interested in a field that they otherwise might not have been interested in.
So let me ask you this, a couple of things here. One, there's a really important piece I want to get to in a moment about white and black students and students of different races and ethnic backgrounds at Towson and the situation. I want to get to that specific piece because I think that's important to tackle and wrestle with. But one of the things when you were on here last was the whole controversy over the debate team being thrown out of Towson. And you clearly were coaching the debate team and you were on the debate team and won this major national competition. But one of the demands in this was reinstituting that. And unless I read this wrong, they're agreeing to reinstitute the debate team next fall, fall of 2016. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
It is. What's interesting is that that's not even, like, that shouldn't even have to be a conversation.
Right.
You know, given the level of success and national notoriety that Towson has been able to produce, and that in many ways, you know, the university just over the course of time, you know, have alienated a lot of the expertise that was crucial in creating the potential of having a nationally competitive team. And it doesn't seem to market it as something that they want as a priority. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier in terms of the importance of having tenured black faculty and staff.
Right.
Because, you know, we provide, I mean, there are folks who work on the level, whether it's coaching debate or being a professor, a black professor, there's a level of expertise that we lend that's an asset to the university and that can enrich the opportunity for students that Corey now has the opportunity, has a bunch of opportunities open to her being a former national champion right. debater. This is something that if an institution is actually interested in having substantive diversity, not just the kind of diversity where it's just having more black faces or faces of color, but having a more substantive, robust college environment, that's one of those things that shouldn't have even had to have been negotiated.
Absolutely.
What year are you in?
My senior year.
This is you'll be around for the next debate team.
Right, right. Which is sad because this is supposed to be my senior year in debate.
Right.
And so they kind of sprung, Towson as an institution kind of sprung this on us 2 weeks before one of the largest, you know,
I remember that.
Tournaments.
Right. And they refused to pay for the trip and we had that big conversation here. Yeah.
And so, you know, hearing that at the beginning of the summer or towards the end of the summer, you know, it just seems like Towson does a very good job of ostracizing black students and then apologizing later after the fact. And I think that that's something that needs to be changed on an institutional level, right? Because we can sign a bunch of documents, but the question is, like, is your institution equipped to, like, understand and support black students in every single, like, in every single facet of the education system? And I think that that's a problem with Towson, is that it can do a lot of violent things and then say sorry later. It can take away the debate team and then say, sorry, we messed up. Or, you know, it can fire black tenure or fire faculty that's on the tenure track and then say, oops, sorry, we got it wrong. Let's try again. And it's like, well, you've already done that thing that was really, really bad, you know, like, and I had this conversation with Tara Bynum, who
was not given tenure.
Who was not given tenure. And it's like, well, how, like, you would literally have to start the tenure process at Towson all over again. That 5 years, you'll never be able to get back.
And are they letting her come back in?
No.
But
it's like, you know, like, they're like, oh, well, we can have a conversation with her. And it's like, well, there's no more conversations left to be had. You know, there's no other apologies that you could fathom that could bring back those 5 years or allow her to get tenure. None of that, you know, is an option. You know what I mean? Mm. So it's like, we would need to be able to fundamentally change the institution of Towson University in order to see real concrete change. You can't just say sorry after you've done something that's violent.
And even just, I mean, think about the conceptual blind spot here. I mean, Tara Bynum has been in your show a bunch.
Often,
right?
Yes.
She's
as a commentator and more.
Right. She's been, you know, in various circles that I frequent. You know, as a person who has significant expertise on a lot of relevant issues, she's from Baltimore. So, you know, just, I mean, thinking about the lack of value that a person would have to have for the importance of someone like her should speak to where the institution is, right? That it wouldn't be in your inherent interest, given her scholarly acumen and relationships to Baltimore, being a university that touts itself as a metropolitan university. Right. So to me, it just speaks to the substantive lack of understanding of the ways in which you can contribute to the quality of life and intellectual universe that would contribute to black students in a particular campus that that I think is not unique to Towson, you know, but certainly I think demonstrated by this example of Dr. Bynum not getting tenure there.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a huge issue. And we'd like to see how that plays out as well. I mean, the tenure question is huge, and also who gets hired. Not hiring people because, oh, you're black, we're going to hire you, but how many qualified black PhDs there are who are not being hired in our university systems.
Right.
I think that's a huge issue. Right. But also the question of, I'm curious, Corey, to comment a little bit about the relationship between white and black students on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there were a lot of things said by some white students that they were going to leave Towson if the president met with the black students and some other kind of viral reactions. Could you talk a bit about your experiences?
Well, I can only speak to my experience in Towson, especially because, like, a lot of black students feel the way that I do and then a lot of them don't. But I think that the white response or the white student response, and I think that It's important to understand the context that Towson sits in, right? So, like, when I came in as a freshman, the White Student Union was on Towson's campus and did night, and the university allowed them to do nightly patrols. And these nightly patrols were in a statement that they had put out was to keep Black men from raping white women. They had a known white supremacist come and speak in a diversity series while I was a freshman named Jared Taylor, who was a known white supremacist. And literally, like, it was not even like, oh, I'm educating. It's literally I'm speaking hate speech. So Black students don't belong on this campus. You're significantly not as smart as white students. And then even moving forward, like, just the institutional.
But then we were eventually banned and thrown off campus.
They weren't banned off campus. The reason why their group stopped was, one, because Matt Heimbach, who was the, like, president of this organization, graduated, but also because they couldn't find a faculty member to support the organization. But the fact that Towson at no point decided to step in and say, hey, like, this is actually violent, you know, like, this is violent to Black students, maybe we shouldn't do this here. The fact that the institution never spoke those words is problematic, one. And two, like, a lot of different institutional factors, I think, facilitate white students' responses to Black students, right? So, like, that is the culture, the educational culture that's at Towson that shapes white students being able to get on Yik Yak and say that I want to kill all of the Black students, or facilitate white students. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have to be exposed to Black issues. They don't have Black professors to, like, expose them to, like, their white privilege or, like, the ability to even say those things. So it's, like, all of those different, and that's why I say all of the demands facilitate one another, right? So the fact that staff doesn't have cultural competency, the fact that they don't have any, like, white students don't have any exposure to Black professor or Black issues for that matter, the fact that race courses aren't a requirement at Towson University, all those things facilitate a particular educational culture that allows for white students to have the response that they did and justifies the response that they had towards us sitting in at the president's office.
Right. And I mean, on that question of the White Student Union, so they were never a sanctioned group by the university.
Right.
One of the things that I felt that was, I mean, in line with what Corey said, the problem with the way the university responded was that, you know, there's this notion of, like, radical openness, this idea of, like, liberal multiculturalism. And a part of the problem with that is that the question you have to ask yourself as an institution is you can't be open to everything, right? And a part of their justification for not being more aggressive at denouncing the White Student Union when it was there was that they were like, we want to make sure we're open, you know, to all ideas, right? And if you think about that, that is an example of what it means to be in a position of privilege, right? Because one wouldn't be open, for instance, to an idea that is hostile to the humanity of the folks that the institution is sitting in, right? So the idea of a White Student Union is fundamentally predicated on the notion of white supremacy.
No. The White Student Union at Towson was a white supremacist group. That's what it was.
Right. And so the question is, to be open to that demonstrates a lack of understanding of the issues.
So what? All right. So here you have a historically white college, what people call it. I get the acronyms all messed up, but it's probably a white college, Towson University. Yeah. Where there was an interracial campus. I mean, Black, white, Asian, Latino. I mean, it's a very mixed campus. When I walk through it and drive through it, you can see that. But clearly something's amiss. I mean, and I'm not saying this to paint a broad brushstroke of any group of students at all. However, a lot of students who come to Towson, white students especially, come from areas that have a deeply racist past.
Mm-hmm.
Northeast Maryland, Rising Sun, Harford County, rest, where there have been Klan. We had a show here just the other week about the cross burnings in Harford County that not on people's properties, but on people doing it on their own properties, burning crosses and having these kind of Klan rallies.
Mm-hmm.
So those are real. So, I mean, so what is... I'm curious just the kind of conversations taking place. Who is attempting in the administration? Who's attempting in the faculty? Who's attempting to bridge that, to talk about that, mm-hmm. to really wrestle with that in a deep way?
Well, I mean, I think Black professors have tried to take on that that task. But if there's no institutional support, then there's no way that they can do that. So, for example, Professor Bynum did a lot of, like, work with the Center for Student Diversity and did a lot of, like, conversational pieces within her classes. But white students report her, and those reports go to her supervisor. And those supervisors say, oh, she's ostracizing a large portion of the population because Towson is a predominantly white, you know, university. And so, like, these black professors and black faculty members then get criminalized for the work that they're trying to do and, like, opening the eyes of certain particular students in, like, Towson University as a whole. And so I think, like, it all goes back to, like, this circle of, like, is Towson willing to change the institutional structure and culture in order to facilitate, like, having healthier conversations about diversity, having, like, less criminalized forms of, like, advocacy. You know, like, even when we sat in, a lot of people were like, oh, this is so radical, and there's a different conversation. We could have had conversations about it. And it's like, well, how many conversations do we need to have to say that we need this X amount? Tenured professors and faculty make up 77% of Towson's, like, faculty writ large. That's a problem, especially because white students do not make up 77% of Towson University. And even if they did, I think that there's a problem because I think that the number of tenured faculty at Towson is 6%. Right, and that's tenure track,
and that's a problem across university systems. Where nobody's getting on tenure tracks, and whether people are not being hired. Period. Mm-hmm. Right. With adjunct faculty, but anyway, go ahead.
But and then like that relative to how many students that are of color on Towson's campus, it's disproportionate, right? Mm-hmm. And so what that takes away is resources. It takes away cultural conversations that could be happening. It takes away from like the actual atmosphere of the university. All of that across the board.
Cool. I think Corey's exactly right. And thinking about those students, those white students who, you know, might otherwise, given the time and appropriate context, would have a greater understanding of these issues, because having tenured black faculty is also an asset to the white students to, you know,
no,
to
no
be
question.
There.
Right.
And but again, if those students are coddled to in the sense that when they hear something they don't like, right, the institution gets behind those critiques, then it creates an environment where it's difficult to be able to actually do that bridge building that I think you were referring to. So like Corey said, it all goes back to the institution's willingness to be able to be strong when that is a principle of the university's culture.
So where do you think this goes from here? I mean, you'll be graduating this year, mm-hmm. and I don't know if you are presuming or thinking that you might come back in the fall of next year to be a coach of the team. That conversation takes place.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I think that like what it takes is just like more of like I think that this just comes along with the territory of being black in society writ large. You have to keep pushing for the things that you need to happen. You need to make those demands instead of asking for change. I think because in asking for change, there's no real change that is actually met. Only more of like, what's the word that I'm looking for? Structural adjustments that don't actually solve the inherent problem of university systems across the country. And I think it speaks to the larger context of what PWIs
that's
are. You know what I mean?
That's
like, I think it's a larger context.
Predominantly white, not historically white, predominantly white institutions.
Right,
PWIs, right.
Yeah. So I think it's more of like a larger national thing in terms of the like institutions that are created as opposed to just these individual, because Towson is not just an individual instance, but it speaks to like the larger university context that students are sitting in. So like at the University of Kansas, there's this professor that used the N-word, and that was socially acceptable in that context, and now she's being like charged with whatever sanction or whatever the university is doing. But then you have these things at Mizzou, and then you have these things at Stanford, and then you have all these, so it's showing more of like a, like, that it's a university system thing as opposed to just a, dang, Towson is really, really racist, right? Like, it's like, no, these are the ways that institutions operate. And if we can highlight those ways in which institutions operate, maybe we can start to challenge those on an institutional level as opposed to handling them on, like, a singular, oh, this is just my university level.
And one other thing is that, see, the test of the university's willingness to change will be how it even responds to this conversation, right? Because, like, in the past, when that thing happened a few years ago about them going to Harvard, right, that the response, there wasn't a willingness to really engage on equal footing to say, what can we do to actually change the nature to university to be more responsive to the things that you're saying. And what I'm hoping is I'm sure the administration's listening, someone in the administration's listening, that I'm hoping that their response is to bring folks like Corey and her folks in and really sit and say, what can we really do? What substantive things can we contribute?
Yep.
And put them in positions where they can have an actual effect on how the university is structured. So really the test will be how it responds, you know, to this interview, right? And whether they're going to see Corey as an enemy or as an asset. That'll really be the measure of the institution.
I mean, other students, I mean, I was reading about what was going on there and just kind of following it in the press. There was a letter to the editor of the school paper written by John Gillespie, who's one of the students also
occupied. Absolutely. That's one of my best friends.
And yep. Okay, good. So he talked about, in some senses, was very clear about what still has to happen, but had kind of a hopeful sense to it.
Yeah.
But where he thinks it might be going.
Yeah. And that's where, like, I guess me and John have, like, our intellectual, like, differences, because I have very slim, my hope is not in the university as much as it is in blackness. And by that I mean, like, I don't have hope that the president of the university will change the things that we outline. But the demands that we have, we're supposed to get a conversation going, not just to the institution, but to black students and white students alike that sit at Towson University. If Towson University is to truly change, or the university system as a whole is to change, it's only going to change based on what we demand of it, right? Like, and I think that that's the problem that we're trying to tackle. And I mean, I guess there's hope that lies in that possibility that we could change the university, but not that the university system will change itself.
You know, systems don't change unless you push them to change.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change without that push. Mm-hmm. It's been interesting to see how this develops. I'm also very interested in how this changes internally. I mean, how one of the things I think has been happening, is my perspective, what's been happening here, at least in the last 10 years since Katrina and moving up to where we are now in 2015, is that there is a battle around consciousness in this country about who we are, where we came from, what's the reality of black life in America. That's been the spotlight, I think. Mm-hmm. The question is how you get that conversation in a broader way at places like Towson or UMBC or anywhere else, Gouch or Hopkins, that begins to change consciousness, begins to make a shift.
Mm-hmm. And I think in movement time, and if we think about – you think about Emmett Till in 1954,
yeah,
and the Montgomery bus boycott in 55, you know. So if you think about our current moment, and let's say you take like even like Trayvon Martin, the killing of Trayvon Martin. In movement time, we're really at like 57, 58, you know, whereas the culmination.
In that sense, yeah.
And, you know, whereas the culmination of the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and the Housing Discrimination Act. So, you know, so I see all of this in that larger context.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we're really in the still beginning stages of a movement that will culminate, you know, to much greater things in the future.
Well, I wish we had more time. This is so much more to talk about here, but I want to say this is also, I think we have to remember, this is the 1 year anniversary of the murder of Tamir Rice is today, and I just wanted to point that out in the context of our conversation, keep things in perspective. So I want to thank both of you. Corey Johnson is a member of the first debate team to win this national championship, youth advocate for Leaders for Beautiful Struggle, who's one of the leaders of the organization that took over the president's office in Towson. Dave Von Love is director of research and public policy for Leaders of Beautiful Struggle, Towson alumnus, who is also helping with the debate team, coaching the debate team there before it all blew up. And we'll see where that takes us. But this has been, I really appreciate the work that you all do, appreciate the effort, the push that students made at Towson. And we will follow this in the other universities and see where we go from here. Thank
all
you
right,
both
thanks,
so much.
Mark.
Thank you. Thank
okay.
you so much.
Thank you all for listening in today and being part of the program. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Sianna Greaves, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast the Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org, or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.